come to order. We're continuing the meeting. Recess the call of the chair from yesterday. One item on the agenda, and that is House Bill 204. We have members present, Representative Munoz, Representative Holmes, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Costello, Stoltz co-chair, Osterman, Representative T. Wilson, Representative Edgman, and Vice Chair Newman. We have a quorum to do business. Representative Osterman, we were in progress on House Bill 204. We had Mr. Jacobson from Commerce and Economic Development, but he had to leave. We do have the presentation there. It's pretty self-explanatory. Any onward, sir.
For one thing, I want to explain the a little bit about the can size to give you an example of this is the normal can size that they've been doing for years and years. When you get into it, that this is $6.99 for red salmon. When you get down to looking at what size is that the market has gone to, you know, where bumblebee, my chairman's opening a can of herring there to, but, you know, you get down to this size, here's a can, a can size that shows the difference in what the marketplace is. Bumblebee, tuna fish. There's the market. We're competing on a protein basis, not necessarily on salmon, but on protein. 88 cents. So you've got to get this size down smaller so it's actually competitive in the marketplace. And Atlantic salmon, $3.99, $6.99. So we've got to get down to where we can actually be competitive in the marketplace, and that's what we're trying to do. And that takes money. That takes refitting the can machines to handle that smaller size. That was the only real question that I thought I would bring forward and try to understand. Is there, I know Representative Newman had some questions in reference to how the tax credits work, so in the equipment replacement, and I think that maybe we could ask revenue again.
Sure, we have revenue here. Why don't you come into place, Ms. Kinn? And Representative Newman.
For the record, Anna Kim, Department of Revenue Tax Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question went back to where it starts on page 2, like on line 5, where it says the numerator of the weight of raw salmon or herring. And the question that I had asked yesterday was that because it went from salmon, and then now that you're adding herring, if they received the salmon credits the first time the factory was made and done all this stuff to try and get it up to production, could they possibly, now that if they're going to do herring or even just one herring, because it says, or raw herring, could they go back and get inclusive in all the equipment that's on the list now that's eligible for this, replace all that equipment in that factory under the osmosis that they're now doing herring processing, and still claim the tax credits for that?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, they can move forward and get a tax credit.
You identify
credit.
Yourself for the record. Okay. I was probably diverted on something I shouldn't have been doing. Thank you, Ms. Kim.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, they get the tax credit for combined salmon and herring, so they're not getting a double tax. Also, it would be for equipment put in service after December. Well, I may be misspeaking here, but I was just looking at the date of December 31st, 2020.
Ms. Kim, to help clarify a little bit, and I know where Representative Newman is going, but if they were going to add herring to their canning and salmon processing, to put the herring in there, they need to put in a new piece of equipment that actually handles the flaying of herring, but it doesn't mean that they can replace all their conveyor belts and all their tables and everything around there because they're doing herring. That's a concern, and I understand that concern. I don't think that would qualify to replace all that equipment around the flaying machine just for the herring. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
And that's good to get that on that record, at least the intent of the sponsor, I think, Mr. Chair.
Jim Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because then when I go back down to how it works with the recapture, on the value of those products. You know, if I was developing a business plan and had the ability to use these credits, I would have a business plan that puts the maximum amount of credits available per equipment per year that I'm paying against my corporate taxes. And I would develop that into that plan to where I would end up eventually paying no corporate taxes each year and be replacing equipment such as freezers and stuff that are available for this. And, you know, I mean, that's just a good business plan, quite frankly, if we allow that to happen. If I was doing that, that's what I'd be doing. Is that the way this could work?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, it possibly could work that way. However, the recapture is for when you have a business plan and things don't exactly work out the way that you thought. And so we have this provision in here to recapture some of that.
Okay, thank you. One more question, clarification. And I talked to Representative Ostrom, and he suggested we talk to Revenue about this. So if they're going to make it, Representative Osterman suggested that they might try and develop a powdered product doing this. So if there's a lot of money spent on research on how to do this and to create the machines and equipment to do this, and what if it just doesn't work? It doesn't pan out. It fails. The equipment they had, it didn't make it the way they wanted to. So they have to go back and come back with a whole bunch of new equipment and try again. That's product development. That's how it happens. So can they continue to get the same credit for product development like that, even on a failed program? Could they continue to get the tax credits on new equipment to continue to try and create new products?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I guess it depends on if they're still, operating under the way the bill reads. Certainly the purpose of it is to incentivize, new ways of doing things and to be flexible for the changing market. And so, possibly they might have to go back to the drawing board. I don't know if I really answered your question. As long as they're fulfilling the intent, contained within the bill, they would continue to get a tax credit.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before we go to Representative Wilson, Ms. Bales from Department of Revenue in Anchorage, do you have any addendum to that?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, this is Joanna Bales, Deputy Director of the Tax Division. And just to kind of add to what Ms. Kim mentioned, as far as the taxpayers can receive credit for investing in equipment that is part of a value-added process, and it just seems highly unlikely that they would continue to invest because this equipment is up to 50% of the cost of the equipment. The credit doesn't cover the entire cost, so the company itself would have to be investing their own dollars. So we just don't see a lot of risk with taxpayers continuing to invest in equipment, asking for a tax credit where they're putting 50% of their money on the line as well into a process that isn't having any kind of return of investment for them. So I think the risk there is fairly low.
Mr. Chair. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is to the sponsor or to Revenue. So are we overtaxing the fishing industry? I know, I'm probably going to get in a dangerous zone here. Or do tax credits better say what we want to have happen with the money that basically we're giving back off their taxes? So I hear that a lot. Why a tax credit versus maybe we're really just overtaxing the industry and we should lower the taxes, and therefore you wouldn't have to have all the paperwork?
Sounds like a political question to me.
It probably is.
No, we are not overtaxing the industry. Matter of fact, we probably are undertaxing the industry when it comes to state taxes themselves. as far as incentives for the economic development and the expansion of industries in the state of Alaska, I think it's the appropriate thing to do is to encourage reinvestment in Alaska, reinvestment in the industries. Now, whether it's oil or whether it's timber or whether it's minerals, it doesn't make any difference. If you want those industries to expand, a lot of times you've got to help them. Now, all the other industries that we have in the state of Alaska pale compared to the gas and oil industry that we have right now. But nobody hesitates to think about a tax credit or give a zero tax base to some of those major industries, such as the Cook Inlet. But we get into these debates about these small industries that are paying taxes or getting a little bit of credit and try to justify what they are. So, no, I don't think that they're overtaxed at all. I think that, though, that we need to continue the incentive programs to try to get those jobs created out there. And this bill only applies to that process and money spent in Alaska, not outside of Alaska, where a lot of this industry is.
And I'd just like to add, I'm a supporter of the industry in Alaska. If there are so many other competitive forces that push industry out of Alaska for processing, higher labor costs, higher fuel costs. It's probably if they were just going to do what was best economically for them, they'd probably ship it all frozen to China and process it over there or some other market. And as I said yesterday on the record, this is not an industry that provides much support for our state general fund, but it is a large employer. And if we don't do these types of things, we'll probably seeing them making different economic decisions to locate in other jurisdictions, because the economics are real thin on some of these operations in Alaska. And, there's so many other competitive costs, isolation, fuel, when you're operating out of your own diesel generation, running plants, and just everything is more expensive up here and the economic. And not to speak for the industry, but that's been my observation and sitting on ASME for 8 years. And I guess I got to know a lot more about the commercial fishing industry because we never have only been on finance, and we never get to talk about sports bills up here because they never make it up here. So I guess I've had to learn more about commercial fish bills. And that's fine, and nothing ever makes it out of the House Fisheries Committee. So. But I apologize for making those statements, because that's an accurate reflection, and it's really a poor part of our process. But that's why are we talking about commercial fishing bills? That's the only fishing bills that make it up here. I believe Representative Guttenberg was in
here. No, thank you, Mr.
Representative Munoz.
I have a question for the sponsor. Could you speak to the issues that have led to the decline in permit activity in the herring fishery, and also, as is illustrated on page 5 of the presentation, and also what the impact of commercializing or further commercializing herring will be on the roe fishery, and also on the general impact of other fisheries, herring being the base of the food chain?
The initial discussion when we started this, the concept of the herring dealt with Western Alaska. Western Alaska at that point in time, and still is, a lot of foregone harvest of salmon. As the co-chair said, remoteness of it, the cost of operations out there, to go into a lot of these places is prohibitively expensive to set up and harvest those herring, or excuse me, those salmon. So the concept is that we have a lot of herring fisheries or potential fisheries out in the Western Alaska that could, once you have the combined herring and salmon market for that, the industry would make that investment. And so, and this partly helps incentivize them to go out and do that in Western Alaska, where there's a lot of fisheries out there that are not being harvested right now and not being processed. But one alone would not stand on its own. The only way the herring fishery is propagated out there is they go out and catch a whole bunch and freeze them and take them and smack the herring out of them, and then they discard the bodies or turn them into bait fish or something that has very low value. The objective here is to raise that value up, raise the profitability up, so that the fisheries will grow, basically. Your second part of your question was?
Well, I'm just concerned about the, if you turn a product into a food you change the marketing of that product from roe to, you know, the full herring. What does that do on the, you know, the ecological impact of that? I just wonder if you've thought that through.
I see no ecological difference between what they're doing right now as far as they're going to take the roe. That is the most valuable of the herring product, is to take the roe. The problem is that they just discard all the males, for example, even before they get started, or they block them up and freeze them and put them into bait process. So the incentive would be that you would not just discard those fish, you would actually use them, and the profitability then of the whole operation would go up if they had the marketplace. And that's where we started 3 years ago, by putting a couple $100,000 in ASME. They've gone out in international marketplace and have sold that herring that right here, and they've shown that
it looks delicious.
And they've shown that there is a demand for that high protein. And so now we've got CDQ groups in Western Alaska that are asking for the same information. They've come to us and want to know how they can incorporate what they're doing for their small communities out there and looking at the herring products. So okay. It's working. It's already started to work.
Okay. So it's using what's not being utilized now.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I think I also heard the chairman say that no matter what the industry, taxes affect behavior. Is that in there, too?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Are there any? Well, I do have a question on this. Is on the? I meant to ask it earlier. Was this is a reduction in potential reduction in state revenue? Is that just follow through with the amount available for communities as well? Do they absorb part of that tax loss? Ms. Kim?
I think Joanna might be able to address this better, but my understanding is no, it does not.
Is not, so they're held harmless.
That's right.
Only the state treasury, so their revenue share.
That's correct.
Is that good or bad, Representative Osterman? I'm serious.
Yeah, that's a fair question, and I'm not sure. The objective is, particularly in these small communities, actually create economic development so they have a tax base.
So they could be part of the encouragement quotient?
Sure.
Well, I'm not going to deal with that now, but there's a lot of other process, and I don't know why I didn't think of that until just now. But Representative Newman?
Well, Mr. Chair, just because you're on that point, and I have been thinking about it, as a woodworker, I'd like to see some more product development in our forestry industry. But here we've got the second or third largest industry in this state. It's a huge industry with hundreds of millions of dollars in value. The chair, Mr. Co-chair, sponsor of the bill, has stated prior, and again, you know, that it's his thought that taxes aren't where it should be on this already. And I know these are some comments, but here's the point I'm trying to make is there's a lot of industries out there that would love to have these opportunities. Look at our small loggers. I mean, they're the ones who, I mean, if they don't need help, I don't know who would need help. Where you go to new product development or changes in equipment, changes that are happening in product sizes, whether it's the size of can, and you got one of the largest industries in the state as far as financial income that pays a minimal amount of taxes to the state, and we're offering additional credits to go back and redefine what they're doing and help do that. You know, I mean, these are the things. We just got $2 million out of the S-Bus, and I won't go down that road, but, you know, those are the things that we need to continue to think about here, and I'm not going to stand away this bill right now, but I certainly have questions on how he continue to do this, and I guess maybe a question to the sponsor on the financial end of it is, do we know the expected cost of this that could be coming through here so that we can measure it against other industries that we might want to try and help, their costs? Where do you start and stop? I mean, I know you think about this stuff a lot.
And I think it's a fair observation. It's when we discuss timber and mining, many, not universally, but a large part of the opposition to both of those industries comes from commercial fishermen. It's an irony. But, I agree with you. There should be more discussion on the table. We're not going to resolve that today in this bill, but I think I'm glad you brought all those points up, Representative Newman. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Ms. Kim, we're taking a product that's underutilized. We're increasing its value. Is there going to be any return to the state in its revenue because we have a product that has little value now and it has enhanced value? I mean, is there going to be cost recovery for, rolling forward, is the state, but, well, you got my question. I have to repeat it.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I think over time we'll see, but, you know, we expect that it's going to boost the economy, address market changes and things like that. Is that?
Well, if the success of the developing new products is going to enhance the tax base, that's the question. Is there any calculation on what that means?
Through the chair, you know, the tax credit is, you know, in the scheme of things, you know, we have our fishery business tax revenue and tax credits claimed handout that we provided the committee. You know, in 2013, we had a tax credit for this particular one, $1.8 million. You know, I think that the advantages or the positive impact can't necessarily be reflected in the dollars. I think it's an overall shared benefit. So I don't know if I could place a number on it.
Thank you.
There's a fundamental whether or not you believe in capitalism, the market forces, and like to deal with others. Just Representative Fosterman, then.
Yeah, just to highlight that again, what happens down the road is if you can get that unutilized species and capture it, that's a raw fish tax that increases. We don't collect right now. We don't have. So, yeah, there should be a benefit down the road that will help offset that. It takes, you know, you got to go over that bell curve and make the investment and get down there and where you're at it.
Representative Edgemond.
You know, and I would just add that a big part of this bill is to help take a raw product, Alaska seafood products, and to help make it more market competitive, which in turn, certainly benefits fishermen in terms of ex-vessel value and the actual contributions that go on the fisheries business tax that, in theory, you know, would increase the overall pot, the 50% that goes back to the communities, the 50% that goes back to the state. I would argue there's a definite correlation there as well, that if you can help the industry in its quest to provide more market, more market-ready products, like we saw when the chairman showed us the cans a moment ago, there is definitely a multiplier effect back to the fisherman, his or herself, as well as the state and the community. I mean, I we can't sit here and provide any exact numbers. The fiscal note talks about unpredictability. You never know when you put a tax credit in effect what the impacts are going to be over time. But I would argue with the co-chairman, the sponsor of the bill, that what we've seen thus far with this tax credit, which has been in place since 2003, that we have seen it do what it was intended to do in terms of being a stimulator for the whole chain of economic value, again, from the fishermen to the industry to the state along the way.
But not a boost to the state treasury.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we're not talking significant dollars, and I think Representative Osterman talked about that, because the tax, which is a whole separate issue on the raw fish business tax.
Yeah, I just don't want to raise expectations.
No. You know, I mean, this is what it is. I think we understand the significance of the raw fisheries business tax to the state.
Any other questions?
One final comment, if I can, if there's no more for questions. When we talk about the value-added portion of the waste stream, and ideally you would want to see that converted to a high-protein value that is human-grade, that you go out and feed the world with, rather than just dumping it back into the, grinding it up and dumping it in the ocean. We totally expect that there's going to be a phased process that goes through. You may take that waste stream right now and turn it into a cat food or a dog food or a chicken feed or something like that. And then as the marketplace builds and the process builds and we expect it to be human-grade protein, a lot of it going to human-grade protein, because I think that's going to be the more value to the industry and the marketplace. So that, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Are there any amendments on the fiscal note, Representative Costello?
Mr. Co-Chair, sponsor substitute for House Bill 204 has one fiscal note dated February 14, 2014. It's OMB component number 2476. The impact of the operating budget shows zero, and the impact in the change of revenues to the state is indeterminate.
Because it's actually continuing a program in place with expansion. On that, the fiscal note, Representative Newman, did you?
Is that a motion?
No, that was just, she brought out the fiscal note. Was there just any discussion on the fiscal note? And I'm going to have Representative Costello make the motion to move it out of committee, just break out of order on that one. Well, she's got a special addendum to it. Representative Costello.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move that we move sponsor substitute for House Bill number 204, version /O, from committee with accompanying fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations on the condition that Representative Osterman takes two healthy bites of canned wild herring in front of the committee.
Is there a date on that?
Anybody ever eaten this?
I think that's good enough.
Need a napkin?
Are there any? Did you have, before we move the bill out of committee, is that a little, Ms. Kim?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to note that the version I'm looking at is backslash P, not O.
Mr. Coach, if she's correct, I'd like to rescind the previous motion.
Without objection?
Mr. Co-Chair, I move CS for sponsor substitute for House Bill number 204, finance, version backslash P, with accompanying fiscal notes and individual fiscal note and individual committee recommendations and the digested wild salmon that, or excuse me, herring that Representative Osterman has consumed.
What you won't do to help commercial fishing. Oh, it's delicious. Hearing no objection, and the bill is moved out of committee. We won't bring up 306 today. We'll be back with the sponsor and staff on that. And I appreciate Representative Newman all the questions that you probed on this bill and onward. And I just like to note the bill that we had scheduled and we'll have it later would actually sunset all tax credits if you know if that's one we're going to consider. And this would be thrown into that rotation, although it's extended to review it. Nothing will. But that obviously that's just a bill, and I just want to just reference it that we are looking at all tax credits, and because they are really general funds at the end of the day, to have that as we're entering a whole new fiscal era. That with that, thank the members. We'll be back at 1:30. It's our intent to bring up HDR 22. Which is the Convention of the States, and HGR 10, as I mentioned previously, Representative Wilson's constitutional amendment on the transportation fund. So with that, we will stand in adjournment, and we'll reconvene at 1:30. Thank you.
1:35. Call the Finance Committee to order. It is now 1:35. We have Representative Newman, Representative Edgman, Representative Wilson, Representative Osterman, Representative Costello, and Representative Holmes. We do have a quorum. A couple of the members are having bill hearings that they're out at. We've got at least one, maybe two members that are out of town. So we'll go ahead and take up the Representative Wilson's bill, which is a constitutional amendment, and it's HJR 22. And we've had public hearing on this before, we've had a lot of conversations about it, so we're just going to delve into if there's any more conversation that we need to have. Perhaps Representative Wilson, do you want to have any opening?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson from District 2. This is a resolution to hold a convention of the states. And what this resolution does, it says that if 35 states all pass a resolution, as this one is, that we want to be a part of that convention. What would have to happen after that is the state legislature would then determine how many delegates they want to send, which issues of these four that they wanted the delegates to speak about. If they didn't speak the way they wanted to, then we would be able to replace them with an alternate. So I know one of the questions is, what about a runaway? The legislatures have that kind of control. Then once an amendment is finished, if 35 delegates vote yes on it, it goes back to the state legislatures, and then 38 of the state legislatures would also have to approve it. So there's a lot of check and balances. And with that, any other questions you may have?
Okay, thank you. Representative Garris just joined us. Any other conversation, questions? Representative Costello.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we had spoken earlier about this, but I just wanted to give you a chance to comment on the record. My question had been whether or not the convention that's called has to be limited to the items that are listed, and you had looked into that, and I was hoping you could provide an answer for the committee.
Representative Costello, through the chair, yes. And in fact, the legislature can even narrow it even further than that. They do not have to even speak on those issues.
Follow up.
Representative Costello.
And it's my understanding that there's no provision for states to rescind a call for a convention. And so, therefore, when you start counting the number of states that have made a call, you're essentially counting and you're basically setting those in categories that coincide with the list of issues that are in their call. So, for example, if two states have a call for a convention that has to do with term limits, and other states call for a convention that has nothing to do with term limits, that those aren't then counted as a sum of states that are called for a convention, that essentially the list that's in our call will determine the agenda for the convention.
Representative Costello, through the chair, that is my understanding. And even changing them a little will give Congress a way to say that they don't match. So that's why a lot of you'll see that they've been drafted similarly in all the states. And then, as you know, going through a House and then through a Senate, it's going to be very difficult to have them come out the way they started. And that may make them so they don't match. We need to make them as similar as possible so that the Congress knows what the intent is of the state.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Guerra and Representative Wilson, Representative Munoz has joined the table.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wilson, we all have a lot to do, and one of the things I did was ask for a legal opinion on whether or not there could be a runaway constitutional convention. And I'm only talking from memory. I've just sent Toby down to go get the opinion that we received. As I recall, it says the Constitution leaves open the possibility that it could be interpreted to mean that a convention would not be limited to the topics the states passed, because the way the Constitution reads is that after these circumstances happen, a Constitutional Convention will be called. But I may be saying things that are different than what the memo said, so I'm waiting to get it, I'll share it with you when I get it.
Representative Garrett, through the chair, you at the beginning we were discussing this. What there will be, the resolution says we want to be at the table if 35 other states pass a resolution that's pretty well written in the same fashion. You do not have to talk about each one of these. We will have a bill, the legislature would have a bill, that then would specify how the delegates would be chosen, although you still only get one vote, what topics they can or cannot speak, and you can make it as specific as you want on what you want them to do within this realm. So they can't just talk about anything they want to. It has to be in the realm of what the state legislature has sent them. Then, once the amendment is put onto the floor of the convention, 35 states have to accept that. and then must go back to the state legislatures, and 38 have to pass that amendment without making changes and everything else in it, because that's the amendment that came out of it. So it is up to the state of Alaska to be as specific as they want to be as they send the delegates down.
I better wait to see the opinion, and I'll share it with Representative Wilson and anybody else who wants it.
Any further discussion? My only comment on this bill is that I think my personal preference is that we just concentrate on a balanced budget from the United States government, and I think it the number of different issues that is proposed within this resolution give me pause, and I've explained that and talked to the sponsor about it already. So, Representative Guttenberg has joined us. No further questions, comments? Mr. Vice Chair, do you want to make a motion to move this bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Resolution Number 22, /U, from committee with any individual fiscal notes or individual recommendations.
Any objections?
I'm going to object because I'm not sure we've read the fiscal note.
Oh, we didn't. I'm sorry. Yes, let's go ahead and do the fiscal note, and then under your objection, we'll read the fiscal note. Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair, there's one fiscal note for HJR 22, dated February 7th, 2014. It shows no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you. Did you include fiscal notes with your?
Yes, sir.
All right. So we have a motion before us. Is there objection still? I assume the objection is lifted. Seeing no further objections.
Need a restate?
Seeing no further objections, House Joint Resolution 22 moves out of committee.
Thank you.
That brings us to our next bill. We have Representative Peggy Wilson is here. We have now Joint Resolution Number 10 in front of us.
You want a motion?
I'm going to have Mr. George join us at the table and explain. We do have a CS, and he'll explain the difference in the CS. Mr. George.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. Members of the House Finance Committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Daniel George. I serve as staff to Representative Stoltz and the House Finance Committee. Before members is work draft for CS for House Joint Resolution Number 10, Finance Version C. Version C replaces Version N, which was the Judiciary version. The changes are as follows. On page 1, line 14, July 1st, 2014 has been changed to July 1st, 2015. On page 2, line 2, from a studded tire tax has been inserted following from a tire tax. Page 2, line 6, the word 50 has been spelled out. This was previously numerical, 50. Page 2, line 7 and line 8, at the end of line 7, studded tire taxes has been added following tire taxes. That is the entirety of the changes to the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. George. So, any question to Mr. George? Seeing none, Mr. Vice Chair, would you move for sake of discussion the word to CS?
Chair, I'd like to move for committee consideration, committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 10, Finance Version /C for committee discussion.
And I'll objectively move it until we have the discussion. Representative Peggy Wilson, you want to come join us at the table?
Fancy meeting you here.
If you want to break staff up, that's fine, too. You want to speak to the CS to start with?
Yes. First of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My comments are that I'm perfectly fine with the changes that have been made. It brings it up to date because we were a year behind. And And it was our intention to make the changes on the second page that they made. So I'm very pleased with this and would love to get this passed out of committee if possible.
All right. Any discussion from committee members on the CS or the whole concept of the bill? Representative Garrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I still think this is, in the long run, going to run through, if to capitalize it in any meaningful way, you know, if you want to produce $80 million a year out of it, you're probably going to have to put $2 billion into the corpus of the fund. For transportation projects, we have historically, last fiscal year, this current fiscal year, without even legislative ads, we're at $123 million capital budget if you don't count in operating costs for those facilities, which is another $300 million. And so the benefit of getting an amount of money for transportation that we would likely appropriate anyway, compared to the burden, which is a faster depletion of what might remain of our $17 billion in savings, I think weighs in favor of protecting our savings and then funding transportation on an annual basis. Under the governor's proposal, we'll be down to $13 or $14 billion of savings. Where we'd have put an estimated $2 billion into this, will be down to $11 billion in savings, and then that's without dealing with deficits in future years. So I know how much work you put into this. I know how strongly you believe in this. This isn't one of those things that, you know, I have terrible emotions about, but I just don't think that it's fiscally prudent, and I do trust that the legislature will fund transportation projects as a priority based on the funds that we have and the competing needs and the need to prioritize between education and energy projects and rural development and job training and the university and all those things that we have to look at. So I'm not going to ask for a vote on this bill in this committee. I think you have every right to bring it to the floor and try and get your votes. So I just don't think that it's a wise use of money, or the wisest use of money, personally.
Thank you, Representative Garrow. Representative Costello.
Thank you, and I want to thank the sponsor. I know, you know, as you mentioned, that you've put a lot of work into this legislation, and before us today is just the constitutional fund, so it's just creating the fund. And the timing of it is interesting. I have found that 5 or 10 years ago, if this had been proposed, I would not have been intrigued to support it because we were in a better, you know, fiscal situation. And I think because we're looking at tougher financial times in the next decade, it's because of that I'm supportive of creating this fund, reinstating it back into our Constitution. I asked the question, how many roads has this administration built since, you know, this administration's been here? And the answer is 3 miles. And so you can tell that even in times where we have a lot of money, we are funding road projects, repaving, and, you know, upgrading our roads. But in terms of new roads that provide access to resources, which our state is rich in natural resources, and that to me is where the economy is going to grow. And we had the commissioner of the Department of Revenue mention that to the Finance Committee, that it's the development of those resources that will help our state in financially. And so I've gone from not supporting this concept to supporting it. And I again want to just thank the sponsor for all the work. I was a part of that subcommittee during the interim that traveled around to the communities to hear about the support for it. And those are my comments, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Costello. Any further comments? Okay, I'm going to lift my objection. Is there any further objections to this bill moving out of committee? Representative Costello, fiscal note.
Mr. Co-Chair, House Joint Resolution 10, OMB component number 21, dated January 21st, 2014, shows an impact on the operating budget of $1,500. And in the fiscal note comments, it could increase to $22,000 if there's a requirement to print an 8.5 by 18 inch ballot.
Thank you, Representative Costello. Seeing no objections, we will move House Bill, excuse me, CS for House Joint Resolution Number 10 out of committee. Representative Holmes. That's great. I forgot. I object. All right. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 10, Finance, version / C, from committee with any individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing, seeing no objections, CS for House Joint Resolution Number 10 moves out of committee. That is all we have scheduled for today.
Thank you very much.
We come back Monday. We will have Senate Bill 125, reject the recommendation of the Compensation Commission, and HB 305, the junk dealers and metal scrap licensing. Okay, with that, then we are adjourned.